Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a special broadcast. Tonight we have ISF Podcasts and my own cathode ray mission. I'm Adam Ferens presenting a memorial to Dean Stockwell. Joining me is Carl Kafer. Say hello.
Greetings and salutations from the ISF crew.
And Noel Vera. Say hello.
How are you doing?
Doing well, Noel. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
So tonight we are looking back at the career of Dean Stockwell, who passed away last week. And this is an actor who has a career that spanned from 1945 until 2015. He began as a child actor. He worked fairly steadily throughout those years. I mean, there were some years where it was pretty lean. He ended up starting to fade in the late 70s. Had decided to give up on acting and go into real estate. And just then, his buddy Sam Shepard said, "Hey, look, I'm doing this film with William Wenders, and you got to come and be part of it." And that was, of course, Paris, Texas. And then that started a whole new career, or a whole new phase of his career. And the rest is history. So, Carl, what would you like to add to this?
Actually, it was both Sam Shepard and Harry Dean Stanton.
I was just about to say, and actually I think it was also Harry Dean Stanton, who, you know, obviously amazing. I mean, shit, just those three together, good Lord.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the things I do want to mention, and we talk about early in his career as a child actor, he's one of the few child actors who really made the transition in like three phases. And he was never really a leading man in his adult life, but he was an incredible supporting player. And we'll talk about a lot of those roles as we go on tonight.
I might call him more or less a supporting player than a character actor, because they were a heck of a characters, weren't they?
Oh, to say the least. I mean, he could play real slimy guys, and he could play really good guys, and everything in between.
Yeah,
so,
you know, and he did it in films and on television. Of course, he ended up doing Quantum Leap and Battlestar Galactica, where he was the fucking villain of the whole damn piece. But this is a guy who, he may not have been a lead, but shit, if he wasn't memorable. It wasn't just the talent and skill, but he had a certain quiet charisma, you know. And I think it really, he always seemed to find roles that fit him somehow. And he was very fortunate, and maybe very talented in picking out those roles, very savvy.
So I have to ask each one of you, and I think you already said, Adam, when was the first time you noticed Dean Stockwell?
Well, you know, I'm 40 years old. Quantum Leap began in 1988 or 89, so I'm about 7 or 8 years old. And I start watching this show when it comes on first. And that's the first time I can specifically remember it being Dean Stockwell. Now, it's possible I may have seen something earlier. You know, I might have seen something like maybe Dune was on television or something. But that was the first time. And obviously since then, and especially I remember as a kid, if I ever saw anything coming on that had him in it, I was like, oh, it's got the guy that plays Al in it. You know, this is when you're a kid and you're watching the show and it's still on. So I got to catch up on some of his early films. But, yeah, it would have been Quantum Leap.
Okay.
How about you, Noel?
Oh, geez. Actually, I'd seen him before in Paris, Texas, but all I remember in Paris, Texas was Nastasha Kinski. And
right.
Who can blame me? But
oh, yeah.
When
exactly.
I really, you know, when I saw him front and center and you can't take your eyes off him, was Blue Velvet.
Mm-hmm.
What was he? What, four minutes on screen? 5 minutes, right? And, like,
yeah.
No one else talked about anything else. I mean, he upstaged Dennis Hopper. Who can say that?
Not many
people.
Especially
in that movie.
No.
You know, seriously. Now, the reason I asked that is because I ran into him much earlier. And luckily, we had early HBO, and that's the only reason I ever saw this. But The Werewolf of Washington, it's an absolute just blast. And of course, you have to remember that it was made during or right after Watergate. So it's a real, real, to all this and all what was happening. And it's such a great little piece of work. And it's stupid and wonderful. And he's of course, the adjutant who gets bitten in Hungary and comes back and basically kills all the bad politicians. And subtle? No, not by a long shot. Fun as hell? Absolutely.
A whole new meaning to eat the rich.
Yes.
That's nice. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's a little film by Milton Moses Ginsberg. And he came out with a really good piece called Coming Apart in like the 60s. And then he just disappeared after Werewolf of Washington. But I have that era and watching all these movies on HBO, you just remember these things. Of course, that was right up my alley. So that was the first time I ever really saw him. And then about the same time, you go back a little bit in his career, and I was working at the drive-in, and Howard scheduled a bunch of LSD films. Of course, of which he's in one of the best ones, which now I got to remember. It's not The Trip. Hold on. It is. Just a moment. Psych Out.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I've seen that. I liked it.
Yeah, Richard Rush. And that's
Rick.
A good film, and he plays sort of the head guru. this is right when he came out after disappearing for a while in a commune. And so it's perfect.
He had the great last line there.
Yes, he did.
Spoilers. You know, he got hit the big car. He's dying, and he goes, "Well, I hope it's going to be a good trip or something."
Exactly.
You know, his whole life is a chance for a good trip. That's all he's looking for.
Yeah.
Right. You haven't seen that, Adam?
Nope. It sounds like I need to though.
That's worth looking at. Laszlo Kovacs, the cinematographer. He pioneered, or at least he was one of the earliest practitioners of rack focusing in that film. And you see it in the film.
Yeah, it's a damn good film.
I like it.
I agree. But I'm trying to think. You know, let's talk a little bit about his TV work. I'm gonna give that to you, Adam, first. Of course, we need to talk about Quantum Leap. I mean, we can't get away from that.
Yeah, no, you can't get away from Quantum Leap. You know, now for people who don't know what Quantum Leap was about, it was about this scientist who theorized that you could travel time within your own lifetime, and he ends up going into what he called his accelerator, his quantum leap accelerator, and he vanished. He woke up, and he was inhabiting a different body. It was him, but it wasn't him. And the only person that could help him on his journeys through time was his friend Al, who was the admiral in charge of the project. And that admiral, Al Calavici, was played by Dean Stockwell. He was a horn dog. He was a loyal friend. He smoked cigars. He fucked lots of women. He also had a romantic streak and wished nothing more than that he could have kept his wife Beth in his life. The only reason he lost her was because he was a prisoner of war in Vietnam, and he was believed dead for several years. And by the time he got back to the States, she believed he was dead. He'd been declared dead, and she was gone. And the show ends, and this should tell you how important a character Al was. The show ends with Sam leaping back in time and telling Beth, Al isn't dead, don't give up on him, and you get a readout at the very end of the show that while Sam never returned home, Al and Beth did make it. And, you know, it's a testament to how good an actor Dean Stockwell is. Forget the writing, because the writing was okay on the show. But Stockwell made that character. That character, you probably shouldn't have liked him as much as you did. You probably shouldn't have felt for him the way you did. But Stockwell put so much humanity and so much nuance into that character. And, you know, it's a character that, yeah, maybe it was kind of there to be fun and funny, but at the same time, there was a good undercurrent. So what do you guys think? I'll ask you, Noel.
I'm ashamed to say I've heard of it, but I've never seen it. And I like
wow.
to call myself a science fiction fan, and oops. And I've
yeah, well, you know, it's not, say, a Battlestar Galactica, which we'll talk about in a minute, but it's definitely worth checking out. So, Carl, what about you?
It was a show that I didn't watch all the time, but when I did, it was all Stockwell to me. I mean, we know that Bakula was in it, and Bakula's okay. You know,
yeah.
and he was the main focus, but he wasn't the interest for me. He never was.
No.
It was always going to be Al, and it was always going to be Stockwell.
I did remember there was supposed to be an episode where Scott Bakula was a rape victim. Anyone remembers that? It was talked about, actually. There was an article or two about that.
That was a good episode.
It was. I hear it's daring. Like, this all hearsay. It's all what I heard about. Also, the premise kind of reminds me of Alain René's Je t'aime, je t'aime. You know, this guy leaping back and forth in time, and he's lost.
Mm-hmm.
So that could have been an inspiration there.
Oh, Belisario, who was the creator of the show, definitely likes classic cinema, so it wouldn't surprise me to find out that he took inspiration from that.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me either.
And you know, we talked a little bit about Quantum Leap, and we talked a little bit earlier about Battlestar Galactica, and he's done a lot of other stuff. I mean, you know, he's done TV going back to the 60s. But his other big role on TV would be as Brother Cavill in Battlestar Galactica. He joined in season 2 towards the end and was quickly revealed as the evil motherfucker that started all the shit, basically. He was the big bad Cylon. And Dean Stockwell played the hell out of that part. You know, and that's a show that already boasted a fine cast, and he was one of the finest additions. Now, it sounds like you've seen it, Noel, but Carl, I'm not sure. Have you seen that version of Battlestar?
Let me put it this way. I watched a couple of episodes. I wasn't interested. I don't know why. You can hit me over the head for it, but no.
I actually saw the original Battlestar Galactica with, what's his name?
Lauren Green.
A few episodes, and then there was a movie version with Sense Around. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
And not the whole series. Then I tried to start a few episodes, and I didn't make it through it. I'm assuming Dean Stockwell was a late addition to the cast.
Yeah. The thing is, the original Battlestar Galactica. I'm gonna piss a lot of people off here. Is not a great show. It's not a great show. The remake is, and that's largely because of the way that the writers and producers treated it. They took a chance on dealing with issues in a realistic manner, in a very forthright manner. There were a lot of social political issues. They also did something that, Star Trek Voyager never handled, which was the lack of supplies. You know, with Voyager, it was always, we've got working replicators. Everything is fine. In Battlestar Galactica, by the second episode of the regular series, the fleet was in trouble of running out of water.
That's realistic.
Yeah, and they were talking about, and there was a character that was starting to, that had begun the water riots, that had, that was basically a very radical political prisoner who started asking for different, you know, new elections and different representation and in the fleet. And it was just, I don't know how to describe it other than to say, you know, it's, people talk about, say, The West Wing as a political show, Borgen as a political show, The Thick of It, or Yes, Minister, Yes, Prime Minister, a political show. They don't really think about Battlestar Galactica as being a political show, but it was, and it's one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
It really is one of the best.
If I remember right, the politics are something about the Gulf War, is that right?
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff about the Second Iraq War.
Yeah, Iraq War, my bad. Iraq War, who's a terrorist, who's not, and, you know.
Yep, but we're getting off a little bit because this is supposed to be about Stockwell, but Stockwell's part in it is no small part. And his work as Brother Cavill, you know, I talked about how he brought a lot of humanity to his role as Al. He's playing a machine. He's playing a human machine in this. And you never like the guy, but you absolutely do understand him, even if you completely disagree with him. But there's a moment or two where you understand him to a point that you come close to empathizing with him. And yeah, that's because the writing is that good, but a lesser actor wouldn't have been able to convey that. And I think it's a testament to Stockwell that he got that to the audience.
Uh-huh. Oh, agreed. 100%. So I had a question for that I posed earlier while we were waiting. Is there a movie or a TV show or a certain performance of Stockwell's that you would consider to be sort of a hidden gem? Well, there's quiet there.
Yeah, I know. I'm just wondering who's going first.
That's something I'm going to have to think about. I'm going to let you guys answer, and then I'll come back.
Okay. Go ahead, Noel. You go.
Well, my first choice would have been Psych Out, because I doubt if a lot of people remember him there. But
yeah,
he did have a third billing in Stars in My Crown, which apparently not a lot of people have heard of. It's only Jack Tornier's masterpiece and arguably for me one of the greatest, not just one of the greatest Westerns, but maybe one of the greatest films ever made. Stockwell was in it. He was wonderful. Small kid, very sensitive, intense. Maybe his biggest role was in the cholera epidemic, where he felt responsible for causing the whole thing. But he had a figure in the final scene, which I won't spoil, but yeah, he was amazing there. I mean, maybe not his best performance in his career, but that's probably the best film he was ever involved in, hands down. I mean, I'd like anyone to suggest another one, but yeah, for me, that's the best thing he was ever. And it's not a film that I think anyone would be ashamed of having in their filmography.
No.
Mm-hmm. Now, for me, I'm going to go to 1976 in a little-known film that was directed by Henry Jaglom, and it's called Tracks. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
I've heard of it.
Tracks is, what it basically is that Dennis Hopper is a cop, and Dean Stockwell is a former U.S. soldier who was in Vietnam. And they are passengers on a train. And it's sort of like my dinner with Andre before my dinner with Andre. And the dialogue and everything that's brought up in this film, and Terron Power is part of this too, which is Tyrone Power's daughter. But basically, a soldier returns from Vietnam, accompanying the body of his friend for burial. During the trip, he falls in love with a general college student, but their relationship is shattered by flashbacks. And Dean Stockwell has the third role in this, and it's really, really good. And if you don't know Henry Jaglom, he's a very, very much a experimental guy, you know.
Yep.
And it's just a really good film, and I would recommend it highly.
Yep. Now, for me, you know, I'm trying to take this a little differently. I'm trying to think of a lot of films that he's been in that I've seen. There's a lot that I haven't because the man was in so many movies over the years. And he did a lot of really interesting parts on TV, even though he wasn't necessarily always in the best TV shows. You know, and I'm trying to take this as an underrated role or an underrated performance rather than a movie, a hidden gem of his, not necessarily a movie that's a hidden gem, although I think this is a better movie than it's given credit for, but that is his role as Howard Hughes in Tucker, The Man in His Dream.
Oh, that was great.
And, you know, I think I've always thought that was a really good movie that doesn't deserve the derision it's gotten. And I've always thought that, you know, I mean, just the way he asks, you know, Tucker if he wants a pistachio. I mean, the way he delivers pistachio is just, it's memorable. You know, that's that's a hell of a thing. I can't remember ever seeing him give a shitty performance. He was always on task, and that's a rare thing, honestly. There's a lot of great actors. One of my favorite directors, maybe my favorite writer director of all time, is Billy Wilder, and one of his favorites was Jack Lemmon. And honestly, as much as I love Jack Lemmon, Jack Lemmon turned in a dud or two in his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's that? I think a measure of how vivid he was in that film, and again, he was only, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In that film? Yeah, 5 minutes or less. I think it's almost as vivid. Well, it's shorter, but it's almost as vivid as in Melvin and Howard. What's his name?
Jason Robards.
Who played Howard Hughes.
Yes.
Jason Robards, yeah. Yeah, he was, if he stretched the performance, he might have been as good. Who knows? But, yeah, I mean, if you put them side by side, Dean Stockwell shouldn't be embarrassed compared to Jason Robards, I'd say.
No.
So, I think we have to talk about one particular film, which we really haven't mentioned. And that one, of course, is going to be Paris, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just an incredible film.
Mm-hmm.
And so talk, the thing is we all focus on Harry Dean Stanton, as well we should,
yeah,
in that film. And Natasha Kinski, as well we should. But it was Dean Stockwell who brought the anchor of humanity to that film. And he's caring for his brother in that quiet role, very underplayed, but yet still very vivid. And so I want your opinion on his role in that film and what you guys think of it.
He was quiet. I remember 1984. I saw it in I wouldn't say first run, but not long after. I mean, that's how old I was. He looked like he had to take care, like his brother, his brother was a big burden, and he had to, here we go again. And that's
right.
Of thing. He was like the heroic brother, supportive brother or something. And mm-hmm. It was like a running gag that, Stanton was always getting in trouble, and he had to pull him out or help him out or whatever.
And yet he still loved his brother, and that came through quite a bit.
Yes,
And again, the underplaying to me in that was just stellar. He just played it so well. Adam, what do you think of his role in that film?
Well, Walt's a really interesting character. You could see that he cared for his family, but there was, at the same time, you could sense, oh no, here we go again. But he didn't do it in the same way that, say, Tom Cruise's character in Rain Man did. There was a lot more empathy and actual familial caring going on here. He wanted to really help his family rather than just do his duty. We've talked about Stockwell managing to bring forth the humanity in all his parts, and he absolutely did that here. You talked about underplaying it. That's not easy. People say, well, it's easy to underplay because you just don't do it. No. What he did here was he played it under the surface rather than shouting it out, and
exactly.
it's all there, but you have to watch for it, and that's really tricky. But but he pulled it off because, well, you know, let's be honest, he was one of the best.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Now, one thing we have not mentioned about Dean is his early career as a child actor. And I just want people to understand what he did. Okay, so the second film he ever did was Anchors Away. And
yep.
He basically walks away at the end of the film hand in hand with Donald O'Connor and Gene Kelly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Or not Donald O'Connor, excuse me. But, yeah, and then from there, you know, he's in a number of films, but he was in Song of the Thin Man as Nick and Nora's child. He's in
he was in The Gentleman's Agreement.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the one I want to talk about is The Boy with Green Hair,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I mean, connects with me because, you know, being a kid and having some physical difficulties that were quite noticeable, I was different than anyone else. And I remember seeing this when I was a kid on TV during a Saturday matinee. And it just really hit me, you know, about the differences and what Losey would then focus on, the director, Joseph Losey would focus on later in his career with Outsiders and such. But a fine, fine film and a very pacifist film. No wonder Joseph Losey got in trouble 2 years later with UAC and was kicked out of the U.S. and went to England. But again, you know, Dean Stockwell does really well as a child actor. And, of course, you know, we were also talking about Stars in My Crown, which of course, is in the same time period, too.
He was 14, I think.
I think he was 14 and he was like 12 or 11 when he did Boy with Green Hair. So Adam, we haven't really heard from you in terms of any of his work as a child actor. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, you know, he did so much. You know, obviously you're going to remember The Boy with Green Hair. Anchors Away, Gentleman's Agreement, Kim, Green Years, but I guess for me, you know, his kids stuff, his stuff as a kid, as a child actor, was good, but and maybe it's my love of the theater, but the next role for me that really got me was something that's coming up in that that middle section, his early adult roles, and that was a film that he did in 1962, and I think you know the one I'm talking about, but I'll get to that later.
Well, you know, that's a funny thing, is that there were three periods of time for Dean Stockwell. And basically you talk, well, actually four, I think, because you talk as a child, then you talk about the post-teen years, which is like 56 to 63 or 64, and then the 70s,
mm-hmm.
you know, late 60s, 70s, and then when he did Paris, Texas, and beyond. So let's talk about that era. Okay.
Oh, which one?
But okay, one of the things I do want to talk about in that era is he did, I got to find it here, but one thing I will say, okay, before we say anything else, he did a lot of TV during this period. And there's a TV show that I love that I actually saw numerous episodes on YouTube, and you can find it. And you can find this particular one, but Johnny Staccato, which is a, which I don't know if anyone knows it, but it's basically a sort of a private detective half-hour series with John Cassavetes as a jazz-playing pianist who's also sort of like a private
detective. Yeah, back from 59-60, only one season.
And it's wonderful. And he plays a bad guy in there. He plays
a serial killer, right?
Serial slasher. Slashes women's faces.
Well, you know, that's a heck of a series. I mean, you know, the music was by Elmer Bernstein, and they didn't just get people like, you know, Stockwell's as guests. They also had, I mean, holy fuck, Gina Rowlands was in there for an episode.
Well, of course she was. She was married to
Elisha Cook was in there a couple times. Cloris Leachman, Martin Landau, Michael Landon, Elizabeth Montgomery, Mary Tyler Moore.
Great little thing.
You know,
John Cassavetes directed the 5 episodes. Wow.
Yep. It's really a show that deserves it deserves a better DVD set than it has now. It's really got a pretty basic DVD set. It deserves a proper Blu-ray set.
But the show I really want to mention at this point is The Twilight Zone, and he did an episode called A Quality of Mercy, which I don't know if you remember. Do you know that one by any chance? It's it stars Dean Stockwell, and he's a hotshot lieutenant, tries to make his mark on the last day of World War II in the Pacific, and gets a unique perspective on his actions because he plays both this gung-ho lieutenant and his opposite on the Japanese army. So he gets to play two roles, and it is pretty amazing. Now, of course, you know, we could talk about Yellowface here, and yes, but there's a point to this. Okay, and I don't know if you remember that episode, but I do, and I was just, like, shocked. I didn't realize it was Stockwell at that point in time. I think when I first saw it, I was, like, 6.
Clint Eastwood's Iwo Jima movies condensed into half hour.
Yeah.
You think?
Exactly.
Yeah?
That's exactly what it is.
That's amazing. I should look this up.
Mm-hmm. Do you know that episode, Adam?
I've seen it, yeah, but it's not one that I've seen recently.
Okay. But you were talking about a particular one in 1962.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that.
Well, that is his role as Edmund Tyrone in Long Day's Journey into Night, the Sidney Lumet version with Katharine Hepburn, Ralph Richardson, and Jason Robards. And, you know, I'm sorry. It's not just anyone that can do Edmund's monologue and not fuck it up. And he really
seriously.
And I'm not going to do the whole monologue, but I think that people, if they want to know which one I'm talking about, if they're familiar at all with the play and they're thinking, well, maybe it's the one I think it is. Yes, I'm talking about that one, the one where Edmund says, "You just told me some high spots in your memories. Want to hear mine? They're all connected with the sea. Here's one." And it's the one that begins like that, and it just goes on and on. It's like two, three straight pages of dialogue, and it's wonderful. And he nailed it. He absolutely nailed it. And the fact that he was able to hold his own with that cast.
Yeah. I mean, and not blown away.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we get into, like, some minor films like Rapture and that. But then we get to Psych Out, which we talked about. But there's one more we need to talk about in this middle period. And I'm not saying it's a great film. In fact, it's not really a good film. But, oh, my God, is Dean Stockwell just friggin' awesome in it. And he plays Wilbur Whately in The Dunwich Horror.
Oh, yeah. That's fun.
It's a fun film. Do you know that one, Noel?
I haven't seen it. I've heard of it. I haven't seen it. I didn't know he was
in
it.
It is based on the Lovecraft story, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically, he wants to sacrifice Sandra Dee to Yog Sothoth. And that's basically it.
And it's and the thing is he's wonderfully slimy and goat-like and awful, and it's just a wonderfully campy, hammy, and intended to be so. I mean, it's a scenery-chewing performance in the best sense of the word.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And once you see him in this, you cannot take your eyes off of him. He's just so good. And he just basically makes you want to watch the whole movie, because otherwise, without him, it would be certain boredom, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Okay. So now we get into the 70s. And he does all sorts of TV stuff, and we've talked about Tracks and that. And is there anything else that we're missing? Yes, there is. Because once we get to the 80s. So one thing I think we really have to make a mention of is Blue Velvet. I know we talked about it briefly, but he's only in one scene. And I'm going to ask both of you how that scene, when you first saw it, just absolutely, what was your reaction?
Well, it blew me the fuck away, you know, because like I said, I was familiar with him from other things, from Quantum Leap, from Dune, from, you know, some things he'd done earlier. Hell, I'd already seen Long Day's Journey and Tonight, and I saw Blue Velvet for the first time. I was about, it was about 15 or 16 when I first came across it. I mean, I'd heard about it, but I just had not gotten a chance to see it. Believe it or not, I think like TNT or TBS had run it a few times, but I was waiting for it to be unedited, because people had stolen the VHSs from the local Blockbusters and Hollywood Videos and mom and pop shows, and the local libraries did not have their copies anymore because people had decided to keep it. So it was a hard film to find in this area. And, I saw that, and I was like, well, okay, Hopper's pretty crazy here, but now I can't take my eyes off Stockwell. You know, hypnotic is a word that gets used maybe too much, but it's very appropriate here.
How about you, Noel?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're turned on by Isabella Rossellini. You're terrified by Dennis Hopper, and he gets even scarier and scarier. And he's scarier here. Then all of a sudden, Stockwell turns on that lamp, and you're like, Hopper, who's Hopper? And he's not even using his own voice, right? He's like,
no,
he's something.
He's lip syncing it, and you get a few whispered lines, and you know, he does most of his role with his eyes closed or half closed, and yet, whoa.
Part of it is Lynch had this concept, I guess, or idea, and for all I know, he just invented it on the spot. It vaguely recalls Joel Grey, except Joel Grey gone off into the Twilight Zone somewhere. You know, but
Joe Gray
is on his own.
On Huppers, basically.
Yeah, but, you know, that might be his ancestor, or it might have been an inspiration, but he goes off in a whole different direction. It's like, yeah, hey, that's amazing.
Well, I know when I first saw that, and I was just like, I was in the movie theater seeing it for the first time, and, you know, that movie is not normal, okay? Let's face it. And Dennis Hopper's scary as fuck. But when Dean Stockwell comes in and does that, and it's like 3 minutes. Again, it's 3-4 minutes. That's all he's in it.
Yeah, because they do the whole candy colored, you know, they do the whole Roy Orbison song.
Yeah, and suddenly it's like I'm in a different universe, watching this person lip sync. I don't know what the fuck's going on, but my eyes are transfixed, and I've forgotten everything else.
Well, that's the power
that's
that's the power of David Lynch.
Yeah.
There's an 800-pound gorilla. I don't know if we're tiptoeing around or not, but that scene's been accused of homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's a troubling thing. I think we have to acknowledge at least. I don't know if we can explain it away or apologize for it. You might have to say, well, it is probably, and that's that.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah.
True. So we haven't talked about Dune. Now, I'm not a huge fan of David Lynch's Dune. Okay? I'm not a fan of Dune, period, basically. I'm not going to see the new one. Don't like the book.
You read the book?
And so forth. I tried. I got bored.
No.
I threw it away, and it just, no. Let's talk about Dune, because he had a very important part in that. So why don't you guys give our listeners that your thoughts on that?
Yeah, he plays Dr. Wellington Yue. He plays the doctor that betrays the Atreides clan to the Harkonnens. You know, it's a role that probably should have gone to an Asian actor. It does in the new film, but then they don't do as much with the role as they did in the Lynch version. You know, they finally get the casting ethnically correct and then don't do shit with the role. And, you know, Stockwell, again, you know, it's a small but vital role. And he does his work. He does his work there. You know, but it's a film that, yeah, I like it more than most. I like the book more than some. I have my issues with the new film, and I'm going to leave it at that. That's a topic for a different show. But I will say that when I was a kid, I took the expanded edition and the theatrical edition, ran both versions off onto another video cassette, and made my own supercut that contained everything that was different than two films and yet made it work. And that became my preferred version, my own personal supercut. I did that. I taped it off of off-air copies and then recorded it. I did that just for fun, just to see how, you know, I was never going to sell it. I was never going to show it for profit or anything. I just kept it for myself. The only people that saw it were a few friends and family. And it was fun. But yeah, I mean, I liked it, and I thought Stockwell was good. But you know, I'm a Lynch fan, and I will say this, and this has nothing to do with Stockwell. Timothy Chalamet can't hold Kyle MacLachlan's jockstrap.
Nah.
How about you, Noel?
Yeah. Oh gosh, are you asking me how many more hours you got left? I read the book when I was a kid, read it several times. I read all the sequels.
Oh yeah.
Saw the Lynch, saw the remake, missed the miniseries because I just couldn't get into the flat miniseries style. It's totally not visual. I love Lynch's Crazy. I will admit it was a lousy storytelling job and it's a lousy adaptation. But it was crazy in a way that was interesting. And, yeah, Stockwell is part of the weirdness. Again, you might say, arguably, if you want to push the issue, faintly homophobic because he's kind of effeminate there. But he was sympathetic. And it was a whole character. I don't think, as written, it does him justice. But Stockwell performed it wonderfully. And, like, yeah, you said, in the remake, ethnically correct, no energy whatsoever. I'm like, there was someone here supposed to be betraying that Atreides. I can't even remember who the hell that was.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
missing another one.
I remember seeing Dune, and again, I was just flummoxed by the storytelling and that. But again, the acting I thought was very well done. And of course, Dean Stockwell did a great job. And he really works well with Lynch. And I gotta give him credit for that. Because when he's on screen in a Lynch film, you can't look away. You just can't.
Well, you know, it would have been fun to see him in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, it would have been really. Yeah, I agree.
And I know for a fact that there was talk that they tried to get him for the Return, but didn't. I'd be interested in knowing which role they wanted him for. You know.
Mm. Now I'm going to mention a couple other films very briefly, but I do want to mention one that's in between Dune and Blue Velvet. And it's a film that I saw in a theater in New York. I'd just been fired from a production, a theater production. I was in.
You were eating all the cheese off the comp tray, weren't you?
No. No. Though I was, but that's not the reason. Anyway, and I went to see this movie, and it's one of the darkest noirs of the 80s. In fact, it's going
to be mentioned.
Oh, I know
exactly what you're talking about. That's the one I thought you were.
And it's going to be mentioned on Tuesday on our Noirvember Part 2 show. So I won't go into it in real detail, but he plays a very sleazy lawyer in To Live and Die in L.A., and he is just so friggin' good in that movie. The thing about
you're gonna love this. I was thinking back when I chose Tucker and his little tiny part as Hughes. I almost went with To Live and Die in L.A., but I just was like, nah. I think that this is a little more. But yeah, he's so good there.
Is that everybody in that movie brings their A game. There isn't anybody that doesn't do a good job in that film, including writer, director, everybody. Cinematographer Robbie Mueller is just fantastic cinematography in that. That movie a gut punch. And if our listeners have not seen To Live and Die in L.A., go see it before Tuesday's show. Trust me.
It's a film I haven't seen in probably 15 years. I've seen it twice. Once when I was a kid and then once about 12 or 15 years ago. I remember parts of it very vividly. It's probably about time I see it again, but I'm not sure I'm ready to see it again.
it's dark as fuck, man. It really is and has one of the darkest endings I've ever seen. And it just absolutely just knocks the wind out. Noel, do you know that film?
I've seen it. I love it. Well, yeah, I love it. It's really sleazy. The Miami Vice, was it before Miami Vice? It was after Miami Vice. It had its own flavor. It's a lot more uncompromising. I remember Defoe was fantastic. Darlan Flugel was great in it, and William Peterson. They were all great, including Stockwell.
You know, and I got to say something else, too. The damn music by Wang Chung is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The soundtrack is great. Seriously. And there are two other films we've got to mention, okay? Beverly Hills Cop 2. Best thing in it, by far. Again,
I haven't seen that.
You know, I played Chip Kane in that. But we also have to mention the one film we haven't mentioned. And it's the film that he was actually up for an Academy Award for. And that would be Married to the Mob. He played Tony.
Yeah.
No, so much fun. And he's so good in that. And, you know, to see him play a comedic role after everything we've seen him in, he knocked it out of the park. He could do anything. So what do you guys think?
No, here's the wonderful thing about that. I mean, he's so likable in that role.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you were rooting for him, 100%.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to have drinks with the guy. Seriously.
Yeah.
You wanted to party with Tony.
Yeah. You felt sorry for him in the way he was terrified by Mercedes Ruel.
Yeah. Well, it's Mercedes Ruel. He's not going to be terrified of her. Seriously.
Yeah. The way she kept going after his testicles. Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Oh, don't make me remember that.
That's why when I did a tribute to Stockwell, it wasn't a picture of him. It's a picture of Ruel with a shot. Well, maybe I shouldn't go into much detail, but that last shot, one of the last shots in the film, and everyone remembers that.
Oh, absolutely. I haven't seen
and
that
when he
in
wakes
years.
Up.
I've got to
yeah,
rewatch.
When he wakes up and the first thing he goes for is he checks if it's still there. Right?
Yep.
Yep, that's amazing.
So as we get near the end of this, do we have any final thoughts on Dean Stockwell?
Oh, wait. You guys haven't mentioned the player.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was... Right, the player. He was a running gag with what's his name?
Can't think.
Yeah,
but they were
and
all
he was
the English guy. Oh Jesus. I know the one you're talking about. The one from Whitnail.
Yeah. Andy Savella, that's his name. Right, and he was with
I'm looking here.
Oh, gosh. What's his name? That's a long cast. Richard E. Grant.
Actually, we're going to be discussing that movie on my show in a few weeks.
Yeah, right. And they had this running gag where they're trying to sell this story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a wonderful with Grant. They had great chemistry together.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That's a phenomenal film, and of course one of Bolton's best.
And he had the single cruelest line in that film when they dragged the girl away because they screwed up the film in the end with Bruce Willis and what's her name, that famous actress. And Stoffel goes,
Julia Roberts.
And they go, who was she? He doesn't even remember her. Huh? She's totally erased from memory. There you go. And that's a great place to close it on.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm glad you remembered that because I would have missed it. So I'm glad we mentioned the player. Is there anything else we might have missed, guys?
I can't think of anything right now, but I'm sure as soon as we hang up,
No, not for me. I got to go too, but this was fun.
Yeah, we're so glad you were able to make some time, Noel. I know you've got to go to work here soon, so if you need to leave, go right ahead and do what you have to do.
Yeah, I'm just amazed I was able to call you to anything because I haven't seen everything. I haven't even seen The Boy in Green Hair. I need to see that.
Yeah, that's actually the 12th film.
And probably Dunwich Horror.
Yeah.
And The Werewolf of Washington.
Please,
you're going to enjoy that one.
Yeah, we got to see that. Okay, so I got to go, and you guys go ahead and have fun, you guys.
All right,
oh, yeah.
Take care. Thanks, Noel, for being with us.
Okay.
Really appreciate
sure.
it, man.
Yep, bye.
Okay. Bye. So at this point, unless you've got something else, well, you could talk about what you're coming up on Friday, or actually it's going to be Saturday, so why don't you talk about that?
Yes, now it's going to be Saturday. Originally, you know, on Friday, I'd announced that my next episode was going to be Friday. But, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say that, and everyone and anyone else, that it's going to actually be on Saturday because we've acquired a guest that can only do Saturdays. And that is that we are going to be on Cathode Ray Mission. Instead of Friday at 8, it's going to be Saturday at 8 this week. And that will be a look at Krzysztof Kieslowski's absolutely landmark miniseries, The Decalogue. For those who aren't aware of what this is about, it's a Polish miniseries about a group of characters, all of them pretty unrelated. There's no central plot. It's all about the themes explored in the Ten Commandments, though very loosely and sometimes only glancingly. Each episode runs about an hour, and it's extraordinary. It's spiritual, it's intellectual, it's warm and devastating, and just one of the best things television or the cinema, because it has been put into cinemas despite its great length, has ever seen. I consider it probably the greatest thing to come out of Polish cinema or television.
It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful piece of work. I have not seen it, I have to admit, though I do know what it's about. And it's actually on my list. And if by chance I see an episode or two, I might call in. I'm not going to promise. Because what we're doing right now, there's lots going on.
It's definitely worth seeing. And the neat thing is there's Kieslowski turned two of the episodes into films, a short film about killing and a short film about love. And those have the same cast as those two episodes, but he expanded things and changed things around, and it's worth seeing.
So what I can tell you as far as what we've got coming up on ISF and Deviant Legion on Tuesday, we're going to have our part two of Noirvember, and we're going to be talking about post-classic noirs from the 60s all the way to the 2000s. My regular crew will be there, Pat Crane and Brian Wallinger, and we also have a special guest planned. We'll see if Stephen can join us, but my former partner, Stephen Ron Keough, will be with us, hopefully, on that, and we'll have a good time talking about some post-noirs, and that should be a lot of fun. Now, on Wednesday, Rachel has a new job, and so her schedule is up in the air, and so we weren't able to do the rabbit hole on Saturday because Adam has got next Saturday set. We won't be able to do that either. Hopefully we'll be able to throw that in on Friday, but I doubt it. I'm still trying to schedule that. But on Wednesday, she is off, and we are doing a couple of watches in preparation for that big dinner on Thanksgiving that we're all going to have. And so we're doing some food porn movies. And her choice that we're going to do on Wednesday is Like Water for Chocolate.
Wonderful movie.
It's a wonderful film. Directed by
I actually
Alfonso
have it on my
Arana.
Queue right now to rewatch.
Yeah. It's on HBO Max, by the way,
yep.
So people can join us for that. And we'll be doing that. And hopefully next Wednesday, I haven't made a final decision, but I have a sneaking suspicion that a week from this coming Wednesday, we will be doing Big Night, okay, which is one of my favorites.
The Stanley Tucci movie?
Yeah, that's the Stanley Tucci film. And
yeah, that's
wonderful
a good one.
Film.
I haven't
yeah.
seen that since it was new.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to be doing that. And there's also, I just spoke to Miss Vicki Love, and I came up with an idea because she had posted something. And Miss Vicki Love is particularly thankful for science fiction and particularly science fiction films. So I'm going to try to set something up for the weekend after Thanksgiving for her to be on. And so we'll do a show there and about our favorite science fiction films. So that's what we have planned. And that's what I got. And we're getting close to Thanksgiving. So people start picking out and having a good time. And hopefully, you know, with the COVID and everything, you'll be able to get your family and your friends together and have a good time and just be safe. That's the main thing. Be thankful
yes.
for what you have.
Yes.
So, Adam, anything else that we're forgetting?
No. You know, I think we said it all.
All right. So why don't you take us out?
Yep. Well, you know, thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks to Noel for stopping by. And we all appreciate your support. So on the count of three, let's say goodnight. One,
all right.
Two, three, goodnight.
Good night, everyone. Thanks a lot. Don't let the bed bugs bite.